We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
We have recovered from Podcast 400. We're back to the you know, the lowly 401.
Yeah, it's you and I sitting in a room. I don't know where all the people went. 400 was awesome, though.
Was.
Thank you guys for
sure,
listening.
For sure.
Actually, for watching, too. We had a good number of people on the live stream, which
would you say 1,000 people on the live stream?
At least.
Like
it was over 1,000 the
yeah,
last time
that was
I looked,
awesome. Thank
which
you,
which is cool.
Thank you.
And I will admit, yes, we set up everything obsessed with the audio, which actually the audio sounded decent in spite of the fact
it did.
We were
so that was audio that the audience could hear. So It was piped into the theater there,
yeah.
And then that was the same audio that was used for the recording.
Yeah,
so
but we didn't
great.
Actually think to bring lights because we never do a podcast that anybody can see. So we were quite dark. But thank you to those of us that watched the live stream and the questions. And what was funny is this is going to sound weird, and I'm going to sound really old when I say this. I don't mean it to be this way, but we had a computer that was pushed farther away from us than we normally would have a computer, than any of you would normally have a computer, so that it would actually get a camera image of both of us.
Right.
But then that meant that the questions were like some sort of eye reading test, like way on the back wall. Like, what does that say with the? Anyways, but there were great
test.
Questions. There were good questions in the from the audience.
We talked
about Jay with his potential car debate, and he is now looking at GLAs.
That's
I didn't
funny.
Tell you that.
Hey, we're slinging hash. We're selling cars. We're moving the metal over here,
slinging
everybody.
Hash.
We
there
are,
you go. Perfect.
We are moving cars. I love it. So yeah, thank you again. That was a lot of fun. I really liked that. And
it was great fun. Yeah.
Clearly, we'll have to do more live debates at some point. But we'll as you said, we'll bring lights and we'll bring a lot of stuff. So
a lot of firsts in spite of being podcast 400, there were a lot of firsts for us on that night, and it was actually really fun. And that reminds me, actually, hang on. I swear this now, in the next probably 2 weeks at most, it may be 7 or 10 days, all of the info will be up for the Utah meetup.
Oh, yes. Thanks
now,
for bringing
that up. Now, if you
go to
our website, everydaydriver.com, under the adventures tab, the dates are already there. But we are setting up our whole itinerary. We're going to have that publicly. Also, that itinerary, depending upon what you go to, will have a little bit of a cost. Now, just to clarify, this is things we've learned from last year, which was incredibly fun.
Things we've learned.
Yeah.
Volume one.
For sure. So the things we've learned from last year is that we have different things that just cost us money to facilitate. So we are actually charging a registration fee. It will vary depending upon how much you're involved. Then it's totally piecemeal, a la carte. And if you do all of it, by the way, everything. If you go to everything, because again, a lot of it is you're paying for your own dinners and that kind of stuff, even though we do have a catered dinner one night. If you do everything, it's going to be less than $75. So don't think for a second.
Track day, though?
No.
Not including track
day. You have to pay for your track day, and you have to pay for a couple of your meals. But I'm saying if you register, good, Todd. If you register for everything,
what do I
register?
And not over here.
Exactly. Yep.
That's for sure.
That's not in this room. There's a different side down
terrible.
The hall.
Terrible.
Anyway,
oh my gosh.
No, but yeah. So if you register, I'm going to stay with that. For all of it, it's going to be less than $75. All of that info is going to be up very soon. And everybody will do a different thing as far as what you come to and all that. It's going to be very fun. I'm excited. But I wanted you guys to know that info, here we are, like we're two-thirds away through May. That's up before June. Mm-hmm. I'm putting it out there. It's up before June.
Yes. By the way, there are T-shirts available on the Amazon stores.
Yes.
You can find the link by going to everydaydriver.com, and then as your cursor hovers over the Pilgrimage Adventures trip, you're going to merchandise, and there is still available. We've got posters, signed American Original posters that we will sign for you, and check those out. And then T-shirts. I'm not saying you have to have Esprit de Corps when you show up at the Utah meet. You don't have to, but, you know, just saying, maybe you want to have an Everyday Driver shirt at the event.
I'm actually wearing out my daily triple shirt. I might have to get another one. I'm wearing it so much. I'm wearing it out. So good that I can get another one. But yeah,
thin and nasty.
It's all bad. Now it looks like I do lots of daily triples. Either that or I sleep in my T-shirt. I'm not sure which I'm actually putting out to the world.
It's not like the daily triple itself is wearing on the shirt because you're in the car.
It's not.
When you're,
yeah.
It's not like it's wrapped up holding mechanicals together to make the
100. But I wear it like it's my only piece of clothing. So I really ought to get another one. Yeah,
it's funny.
Exactly.
Yes, we should have fresh shirts. All right. Really interesting topic Tuesday about an article that you just came across from an author, John Perley Huffman, on Car and Driver, and I thought this was excellent.
Yeah, the opinion piece from him. John's been around a while. He's written
a lot
of stuff. He's written all over the place. Right now, he does a lot of writing for Car and Driver.
He's brought up digital versus analog. He says the digitization of cars and discusses this. And John, you didn't realize that this would become a topic Tuesday, which I love.
Yeah.
So this is our topic Tuesday, and it's really about the question of the analog experience becoming more difficult to find, mm-hmm. and therefore, mm-hmm. does that make it more expensive? And is it making it more expensive? And so there's a lot to unpack there, and a lot of cool insight that he offers there. And we've also got a car debate that does relate
to the
Topic Tuesday from Jim F. We don't know where Jim is located, but he used to have a 1990 BMW 325i. So he had a regular old E30.
Yes, he did.
Talk about that's analog.
That's somebody's lemon's car now, let's be honest.
Oh, that's a terrible thought.
If Jim knew where that car was, he would probably be horrified by the rattle can paint job and the amount of... Actually, he might be thrilled.
That's a weird thought.
It probably is somebody's lemon's car.
All of our prior cars in our lives now becoming lemon's race cars.
If they were icons.
That's weird.
If it was an E33 series, it's probably a lemon's car somewhere.
Your Z car could have been a lemon's car at some point.
Yes, it could. It could, yeah,
that's
for sure.
A weird thought. All right, so he wants to know, now that he's come into a little bit of money without any budget, what does he get to replace that for the future?
That's a good chase. And, of course, tons and tons of great questions. I've got actually questions that reference questions.
So many questions.
You guys are awesome. So there's lots of good questions coming up. So we're going to get into all of that. But back to the Topic Tuesday, rewinding the Topic Tuesday, here's kind of the headline. John Perley Huffman writing an opinion piece, Car and Driver. I found it. I thought it was great. Paul and I started talking about it, and we realized, wait, we shouldn't talk about it now. We should talk about it.
Save
it's a Topic
it,
Tuesday.
Save it for the podcast, for sure.
Which brings me to a side note, by the way. You and I are starting to throw down random things. Like my definition of sports cars and other things that are happening.
Yes, which people are challenging, by the way.
Well, people are challenging the way you take care of your cars, too. But anyway, I'm just saying.
I got body slammed.
Yeah, of course. It's going to keep happening. But here's the thing I want to say is thank you guys for being with us. Thank you guys for asking these questions. And ultimately, yes, we have the microphones, but we're listening to you guys too. And the Discord whole discussion has exploded on discussion about things you and I say. It's amazing to dig into that and to see it there. But we are not, by the way, we're not setting rules here. I do want to state that.
Okay.
We're stating our experience, because at this point we've had a lot of it. We're stating our experience, the things that we believe or know or feel. But there's a lot of room for opinion here. We're not putting down laws in the car world.
No stretch. So, and there might be a little bit of adjustment of the perception of how much I take care of my cars. And I mean, we sometimes push it for the sake of not polarity, but
I don't think there's much of a push. I've seen how your cars look compared to how my cars look.
There you go again. Yeah.
That's a thing.
I'm going to get body slammed once again.
That's a thing. They're in far, far better shape than the average person. Certified Paul owned is a thing. But
we'll get there. That doesn't mean they don't get dirty, though. They do get dirty.
Nobody's saying that.
Filthy.
Nobody's saying that. I don't know that filthy's ever been defined to one of your cars, but that's a side thing.
My definition of
Honestly, the only filthy car I've ever seen you worked on was the day that you and I borrowed somebody else's Raptor and we brought it back covered in mud that was more like paint than mud. That is the only time I have seen you, Paul Schmucker, deal with a car that I would define as genuinely filthy.
Okay.
It's the only time those two worlds have collided. And you, of course, brought out the power washer, which is the only way that thing was going to get clean, and it left sparkling. So there was all that.
The Expedition still has pine needles falling out from weird nooks and crannies and crevices.
But this is not your fault.
No, it's not. This is because somebody other than you had it sitting
somewhere for years, and now you are finally extricating.
I'll lift that rubber gasket up to clean. Whoa, there's a rat's nest under there.
Yeah. But anyway, but the thing I like about this is you guys are so engaged with us, and you're asking us questions, you're poking fun at the answers, you're giving us counterpoints. I just want you to know that we love all of that.
We
are not by any way writing laws over here, nor are we claiming to always be right, but we love the conversation. So let's dive in on this.
All right. Well, John has written this article from the perspective of, obviously, cars, but he mentions a few things in here as good examples out in the world of the analog experience that everybody seems to be searching for. And I do want to take it one step further, and I'll get there in a moment. But he starts with Alois Roof. So Roof Porsches, they're not actually Porsches, but if I say Roof, hopefully you understand that these are the body in white shipped to Alois Roof and the company, and they remake them into $1 million amazing masterpieces with coilover suspension and remote reservoirs and
most car enthusiasts have at some point heard about the Roof Yellowbird, which was the the 90s?
87.
Okay, yeah, all right. So the late 80s crazy 911, and you've probably seen that ridiculous ring video at some point of that car being hooned around the ring. So that's where Roof comes from. RUF, yes.
All right. So the point of the article here is about the evangelization of manual transmissions, which many automotive journalists do. We mm-hmm. all do this. And yep. we've been talking about it, and you guys have been asking us questions about it. And, you know, you bring it up a lot. When there's a debate about a four-door manual sedan,
where the list
gets harder and harder.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And so the point to John's article here is about the rare experiences that we love. And I do want to have the discussion about steering racks.
Okay, agreed.
But these analog things that we keep experiencing in various cars, mm-hmm. the more cars that you and I drive, the further we go back in time, or just the varied cars that we drive, particular things about a car. Mm-hmm. The way it handles, the way it sits, the way it holds itself, you know, the attitude, all those kinds of things, the brake feeling, mm-hmm. and all those things adding up to a particular visceral experience.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's what we're searching for in anything. I mean, we don't love, except for the Expedition, but we don't love the sit back and, you know, drool out of your mouth, and unless you're on a big road trip with gear and
there
family.
There are times for that.
There are.
I have
there
to
are.
Admit there are times for that. Yeah.
But the point of comparisons is to find the visceral experience that we love out of a particular car and then a particular platform. So four-door sedans or hot hatches
segments,
or sports cars
or
whatever that is. We're
What's
going
the
after
fun seven-seater? Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
John is bringing up this point about, well, you know, this is directly having to do with the kind of components that made up cars mm-hmm. from... pick a decade, pick a year, the thing that we love most about the 60s Mustangs or the 80s Porsches or the mm-hmm. 90s, you know, Acura and Honda products or whatever that is. And saying, because these are now becoming more rare for mm-hmm. a number of reasons, manufacturing purposes, cost-cutting measures, the future of electric vehicles and the way the platforms are now being built. I mean, Tesla's a good example of wanting to just put a car together in 7 modules.
Sure.
Instead of just lots of parts, where back in mm-hmm. the 60s, Carroll Shelby was, you know, cutting tie rods and threading this and putting that ball joint on, and then you would feel that mechanical interaction, cable linkages, all those kinds of things, and that equates to a particular feeling about mm-hmm. a car, which is fascinating. So does that mean these lovely experiences, because they are in our rearview mirror in some way?
Sure, sure, sure.
We are searching for them in new cars, but does that mean these cool old experiences are expensive and tough to attain in new cars?
Yes, it is true. That is the case. And the other thing he goes to here is he essentially says, will analog feeling cars become a luxury item? That's kind of his headline here.
That's an astounding thought,
because it's interesting, because the point he's making here is twofold. I see where you're going. You have the older cars, and look at what happens to them at auction. You know, the older cars that are iconic.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm going to stop you for a second.
Astounding.
They're iconic by hype, not necessarily by actual driving. Most of the time, the cars that sell for ridiculous amounts of money are selling because it rolls onto the stage and it is hype embodied with four wheels. And if you were able, and I realize we're not, and most of us listening are not also the person bidding on that, if you were a person that was able to objectively go, does this drive $30 million, you'd probably say, no, it doesn't.
Ferrari GTOs, does this drive like a $70 million? What drives like $70 million?
Totally. You know, but if you pay $200,000 for a Buick Grand National,
cool.
Don't get me wrong. Cool car. But objectively speaking, take $200,000 and I go shopping, the Buick doesn't even make the list. Okay? But it's a hype machine. The $200,000, $150,000, whatever you want to say, fourth gen Supra. Mm. I suspect now that the new Supra's dropped, those are going to go up again. But
do you?
I think they're going to go up again. I think they're going to go up again. I think they're headed that way. But I come back to
the 9/11 effect now translating to
it's the 9/11 air cooled effect translating to
Supras
90s
all these other
Japanese
cars.
Now? Absolutely, I think that's going to happen. But the fact that the new one's out and everybody's complaining that it's not the fourth gen, because of course it's not the fourth gen. But anyway, I think those hype machines just transcend all of this. So there's that level of what John's writing about here and mm-hmm, what we're talking mm-hmm. about. But then there's the other level, and that is, will auto manufacturers, and I think the answer here is yes, will they going forward make, you and I have talked about this, analog cars for, I don't know another way to put this, the discerning enthusiast, the person that wants an analog feeling car, but because want either manual or hydraulic steering, you want a manual gearbox, you want fewer safety features and you want to feel the car more. And so therefore, therefore, your analog car is a luxury item in price. And the only people that are buying quote unquote new, you can't see my air quotes, analog cars are guys that can afford the price premium to get into a new analog car because all of the Camrys of 2050 are semi-autonomous and they just work and they're $30,000.
Analog is now premium.
Yes. Well, I mean,
that's astounding to me.
This is the world of the record player.
Vinyl.
This is the world of
the
vinyl.
Warm
right
sound
now.
To audiophiles. You all know that vinyl equals the warmest, most there. I am most next to the concert stage or in the concert hall or whatever if you're listening to vinyl.
But if you listen to vinyl, cracks and pops and static and stuff that in the digital world gets removed.
Yeah, it's all part of it.
But yet there is something very pleasing about enjoying that. I'm gonna equate it to you, and I'm not even in this camp. I'm gonna equate it to watches.
I mean, that's what John does in the article.
Just
here.
Equated something to watches.
Well done. I'm really proud of you.
I don't care about something with hands on the face. I don't care. But if you do, I don't care what digital watch comes out and what amazing feature it does. You will always want to look at your wrist and see hands and know that gears are doing that. Why in 2019? Does anybody, I'm asking objectively here, and I'm also not a watch guy, but I'm asking objectively, why does anybody have a watch on their wrist that runs with gear technology? Why does that exist?
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for it to exist, and yet it lingers.
Well, there's an entire list of things that now shouldn't exist because we are in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you started at automatic watches. They are classic, they will be handed down to new generations. Why is pour over coffee a thing? You pour hot water over didn't we have like drip coffee makers in the 80s? Like, we had Mr. Coffee.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You buy Sanka and you put it in the thing.
Then it became Mr. Fusion on the back of the
back. Yeah, it did.
Anyway, yeah.
I mean, how about clothing? There's a classic wardrobe that every man should have, from suits to classic pants and dress shirts. And
I missed this class, but I know it exists. I know it exists.
You know what I'm talking about,
though. I still miss this class, yeah.
How about a straight razor shave? Why do we ever need straight razors ever again?
And
safety razors are fine. They work fine.
You bring that up. Actually, that's a great analog because – sorry, analog meaning a reference to something we're talking about, not confusing things. That's a great reference, and here's why. There are whole businesses that you can go in and you can pay good money to get an excellent straight razor shave.
Yeah.
You could have just gotten up this morning and grabbed your disposable razor and shaved yourself.
Yeah.
Not spent extra. Spent what? What do those razors cost? 30 cents if you buy the cheap ones? You see what I'm saying? Could spend not much
whole
money.
Lot less anxiety about getting
totally.
Nipped in the jugular, too.
Totally.
Because that is a possibility.
You know
here.
That when you walk into the bathroom, you're going to walk out alive. And you walk into your own bathroom and you pick a razor up off the counter.
Get a straight razor shave?
Yeah.
Death is imminent.
But you can pay money, and that is an absolute luxury item.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing it for the experience. That's a great one. I like that one a lot.
I mean, this even translates to food with the entire build your burger craze. It's a hamburger. I'm about hamburgers like you are about watches. It's a hamburger.
Yeah, whereas I like burgers.
Hamburger,
but I'm taking a point,
come on. And everybody has turned the hamburger into this new thing where you build it and you craft it.
It's a platform.
It's suddenly gourmet. It's a hamburger.
It's a platform for you to express yourself, Paul.
No, it's not. Give me a break.
Express yourself with your burger.
Golly.
Come on in.
I mean,
pick your protein is where I love that. When it starts with pick your protein. And one of the proteins is the veggie burger that's not protein at all. That's the one that really makes
you had
me laugh.
A crafted experience.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I had a hamburger and fries. The end. Stop it.
This is America. We had a burger. Move on.
I mean, this translates to all categories in, I mean, name furniture, music, of classic standards that are always heartwarming and always evoke a particular feeling to come back to.
Okay, yeah.
This even happens in literature, too.
All right.
I mean, we point back to, you know, Call of the Wild or, you know, Ernest Hemingway stuff.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
You know what I mean? There's always stuff to point back to as that gave me a particular feeling that everything in the new is now searching for
Interesting.
And striving
yeah.
towards.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to make a prediction, and that is along the lines of car manufacturers chasing or now making analog a premium thing, mm-hmm. which means it's actually all the old crap we had in the back of the shop and we're now screwing it together. And this is, we're charging more for it now.
Of course, yeah.
How about car manufacturers chasing, with new technology, chasing that old feel? Particularly
while using new tech.
Steering racks.
Take an electric steering rack, make it feel like an old-style hydraulic rack. Interesting
exactly
idea.
Exactly right. Yeah. And that feeling of the precision and the feel, the road feel coming
back. Yeah, that's
back.
The hard part, is the road feel, yeah.
I mean, the Honda S2000 is a great example. And it's been around for a while, long enough to say, all right, we've achieved this. We can do this.
Yeah, yeah.
How about moving forward in the future for sedans? You and I drove three sedans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is performance sedans for everyone.
Yeah.
We drove the new Genesis G70, mm-hmm. the new 8th generation G20 BMW 3 Series, and the Alfa Romeo Giulia.
In the base form, yeah. Exactly.
So all of those, and we're searching for this very thing. But I want to take it further.
Okay.
And I want to take it to the concept of the Günther Works 993, the remanufactured out of carbon fiber, the Eagle E-Type.
Yeah.
Singer 911s, Icon 4x4s.
You're proving the luxury premium.
This is now a business to take the old stuff, remanufacture it out of new materials, make it more exquisite and well-built than it ever hoped to be out of the original factory, and now sell it at a premium. This is where we've gone with this.
But in all of those cases, what you're doing is you are actually staying analog. You're just producing analog right now.
Yeah.
You're not, unlike your electric steering rack example, which I actually like and I wish they would do that. Unlike that, in the scenario of those super customs, I'm going to call them, in those builds, they are actually just going, how did they build it then? Let's build one now with our current tech that way. So they stay analog. They stay the world's greatest air-cooled engine, but now it's got 600 horsepower, whatever.
Exactly.
You know, your Eagle E-Type, by the way, the electrics work and it has good brakes. That's quite interesting.
But you paid a premium.
You paid a ridiculous amount. This is also back to, and John talks about it, but I thought about this too. I'm going to give three examples, three weird examples. Horses, hiking, biking.
Okay.
All of these at some point in history were forms of transit.
Legitimate forms of
this is how you got places. You walked, you rode a horse, or you rode a bike.
Yeah.
Now, with the exception, I know Amsterdam exists. I know that this is in India and China and lots of places where the bike is more important than the car. I get that. But in general, my point here is all three of those, certainly in the U.S., are now hobbies. They were forms of transit, and now they're hobbies. I'd like to go for a hike. Camping almost falls in this category. You used to live outdoors in a little lean-to shed, and now you're like, let's go do that for fun this weekend.
Earth Roamer has made it very analog
and
inaccessible.
That's not analog at all. But my point here is,
you're outdoors, and
you used to
you've
have
got the
to
stakes on the top of the mountain, I guess.
Funny. You used to have to own a horse if you wanted to get anywhere of distance, but now you own a horse for fun.
Mm.
You go hiking for fun. I will say this as a guy that likes to bike. Okay, I own a bike that I can't believe I spent as much money as I did because it actually had a comma in it. Yeah. I have a bike.
Astounding.
That I go ride, and it is sometimes the highlight of my week.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not going anywhere. I'm literally riding in a circle.
You're at the same point where
I'm literally riding in a circle. Okay?
We were just here.
So it's become a
why
hobby.
We just
but
stay
I think
here?
I think there is those of us that love manual transmissions, and I absolutely am in that category. I am side note. I am missing having a manual when I'm in the Lancer.
Do you? Yeah.
The dual clutch is an interesting experience. Look, I'll probably have the Lancer for a bit, but there's this part of me, and it's not a smart part of me, by the way. It's a quite stupid big hole to put money in part of me that thinks if that transmission ever does go, would I put a manual in it?
Oh, instead of repairing it?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But of course, you know, let's just make the entire dash a bunch of Christmas tree lights. But
on the other hand, you'd have the world's only Lancer Rally Art manual.
Lancer Rally Art Sportback manual.
It'd
yeah, that
it
car.
Worth at least $1,000 more than you may, otherwise
yeah,
sell
exactly.
it for, right?
I'd spend $6,000 doing the conversion, but
totally.
I'd gain at least $1,000 in value. That's good math.
Maybe
that's
$800.
That's project car math right there. That's what that is.
That is for sure.
But anyway, but I love the manual transmission. I absolutely love it, and I wish I had more of them in my life.
Yeah.
But I am fully aware of the fact that if you are commuting every day, you're awfully glad to have the automatic. I think here's the dividing line. Here's where I'm going on all of these, the horses, the manuals, all of this. As humans,
okay.
I know this is a broad stroke, but
as
follow
humans,
me. As humans,
we could go anywhere after
as
that.
As technology
sentence.
Goes forward, the common pattern is we're trying to be more comfortable. We're trying to do less.
Comfort and convenience, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. We want our time back and we don't have to lift a finger.
Which are in itself luxuries. Space and time
absolutely.
Are luxuries.
Absolutely. So what's interesting is the places in society where people, for whatever reason, and these are why we call them hobbies, peel off to say, no. I don't want that to be easy. I want to go on a hike.
Yeah.
I know I could drive there. I want to hike there.
Yeah.
I know I could get there in a car faster. I'd like to ride a horse. I know this will shift for me in tenths of a second, but let me move the gears. Objectively, and I say this as the guy, I wish I was wearing a Save the Manual shirt because I love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is no point in the modern time, just like the analog watch, there is no point for us to actually have to reach a hand down to tell the car to be in another gear. That's unnecessary.
Yeah.
As far as I'm talking about requirement here.
And gear technology, levers are now unnecessary.
Technology has moved past it, but yet I am in love with doing it. And so this is what happens as we get, quote unquote, more convenient. This is the whole autonomous car discussion, too. I just get into a pod that drives for me. I'd like to drive myself. Am I going to be more stressed driving myself? I am, actually. But I'd much rather do it.
Look, you have heard me say that I hope car companies would build all the autonomous, cool tech stuff way out here, the i23, whatever BMW is going to build, and a manual transmission, 6-cylinder. No electronic nannies, nothing, Cooper convertible, just stripped out, lightweight. If they want to make it out of some carbon fiber bits and some cool tech, great, and it lightens it up, and it's stronger and blah, sure.
Yeah.
But these are the divides. The problem is, after reading articles like we have about the Toyota 86 and how few manual transmissions Toyota actually sells of any car, the 86, the Corolla, and yet they brought it back, but... Yet consumers have not demanded them enough because that feeling is equated with the old feeling. And now we all, as enthusiasts, are longing for it and willing to pay a premium, and it's going away. And Toyota is still trying to make a business case here for it. But look up all the articles. Just search for Toyota and manual transmission sales. And there's a number of articles that came out just recently about how few, really, manual transmissions are being sold of any car company.
It's genuinely sad. But then when you start to think about the financials of it, you see why they all stopped making them, because not enough people are buying them. And that makes them more rare. And it means they – look, the whole thing is it's self-perpetuating.
Yeah.
It makes them more rare, which means when they are sold used, a manual 86 goes for more than an automatic 86. Right now it does, by the way, used.
Unbelievable.
The manuals are worth more because those of us that want the manual experience are chasing the manuals. If you just want, I'd like a cute little car to commute in, you're buying the automatic. If that's your headspace. But if I want a fun sports car to drive, you're hopefully chasing the manual. And so that almost always increases the value of those. That was true of the Saab 9-2X.
Well, yeah.
That I had, for God's sakes. And that was also because the automatic on that was remarkably average. But the manual transmissions of those cars aren't that expensive, but the manual transmissions were like $1,500, $2,000 more for a car that was worth less than 10 grand.
Unbelievable. Well, we've talked about this very thing. If you haven't seen our Corvette film that came out, it's called American Original. And at the very start of the film, we talked about a little bit of Corvette history, which included the two-speed manual on the 53 and 54 cars and
two-speed
the
55. Two-speed auto.
Two-speed auto, excuse me. And
well, by the way, two-speed auto, there's an equal sign to terrible.
Well, the reason GM put that on that car is because manual transmission then in the early 50s was considered old technology, and they did not want to be seen as having old tech on their new sports car.
They wanted it to look latest and greatest.
In the 50s!
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
It started then. This is not a recent kind of thing.
That's a great point.
This is when it started. That is probably right about the decade or part of the decade where all this has now proliferated towards getting rid of manuals, even though manuals have existed for a long time.
But
that's probably when it started.
But hang on. I'm gonna stay right there for a second. We do have a big discussion. This is an American Original. I'm glad you went there. But the interesting part of it that comes out of it is those very first year or two Corvettes had a little more trouble selling than they thought they would because their target market was American GIs.
Right.
Military guys that were coming back from England having essentially finally been pulled out of European theater post-World War II.
Yeah, okay? Right.
Those guys were the target audience to try to buy a car kind of like the old MGs and the fun little sportsters that were in England, all of which had manuals. And so they were walking
England.
In and eyeing these Corvettes. They could afford the Corvettes, but it doesn't come in a manual and it doesn't have a V8. So it's like doesn't have the best of America with the V8 and it doesn't have a manual, which is the best of what the English sports cars did. And they kind of went, that's really weird. And they sold fewer than they expected. So they ended up having to put, again, this is the 50s.
Yeah.
They had to put a manual in it.
Astounding.
We strange people all listening to this podcast, thank you for joining us, are the people that are going to maintain this.
Yeah.
But I think John has hit on something with this article. We'll post a link to it when we post this podcast. I think he's hit on something with this article. I think this luxury feel, far more so than just the icons and the eagles and those builds, I think it is going to become analog. If you want to chase that, it's like chasing vinyl.
So the
question is, you are going
to
pay extra to do that.
Are we all okay with paying extra to be able to just have them on the market with the hope and aspiration of buying them used one day? Imagine a BMW 15, 20 years from now that still has a manual, but it is more expensive than, say, a 750. And now BMW is making...
Ouch.
I'm guessing. I'm playing around here. I'm speculating, obviously. But what about those cars? And then we aspire, okay, well, it's still a BMW and they still have the manual. And if only I can aspire to that. And are we willing to pay for that?
I think, here's the thing. It's going to move, and we've talked about it before, it's going to move into that hobby area. What you and I love about cars is going to be like talking about horses in 25 years. I mean, I really do think that. It's going to be much more
25,
like a hobby.
Think?
Maybe 50. But that's it. I think we will be alive when it's a
do
thing
you?
Where it's more hobby than it. And I'm talking about, I'll put a point on it. My Lotus Elise is going to be like talking about I own a horse, I think, in my lifetime.
Huh.
I mean, look at...
You own a horse for no other reason than owning a horse
for the
purpose of riding it and
I own a
whatever.
Tiny, difficult to get into, hot, doesn't have a great air conditioner, the crumple zone is your ankles, analog, small four-cylinder, weighs 2,000 pounds, and by the way, there is no steering assist of any kind. And I own it for fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite possibly.
I think we are headed there, but I think that's the shift of culture toward – this is, again, we all want to be comfortable and not lift a finger. And so I want my autonomous pod that's going to be essentially squirted out of a dispenser. Seriously.
That's nasty.
Well, but seriously, it's just going to be
– exactly how cars are made.
I know, but stay
really
with
it's
me.
Only toothpaste
don't you,
that
don't
is
you
made
see
like
the point?
That.
Don't
and
you see the point, though?
And tomato paste.
I know, I've offended your
tube.
Designer sensibilities, but my point here is it's just we can mass produce them. Chunk, 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 chunk. We're mass
thing
producing
in the Tom
them.
Tom Cruise War of the Worlds movie where it just squirts out. I can't even do it.
I know, you
can't
get
even
there.
Do it.
But you see my
That's
point.
Disgusting.
That's going to be the way that we're getting around places. I think maybe it might be 100 years, but this is where it's moving. And those of us that want the fully analog thing are going to have to chase it, and that will be simultaneously a combination of our time and effort combined with, I hate to say it, cash.
Well, therefore, let me leave you with a list of all the cars that we love that need to be singerized and therefore still around in this future
Singer's
we're talking
about. Singer's
now a
verb. I like it. Okay.
Absolutely. And I'm a list kind of a guy. So
okay. Yes, you are.
Datsun 280Z.
Okay.
I mean, imagine nickel plated trim and titanium
aircraft grade, whatever,
carbon,
everything. Uh-huh.
Mustangs, Corvettes of all years. Corvettes, probably the first three generations, I'll say.
Yeah. What would it? Hang on. I'm gonna stop for a second.
Well,
what's an icon version of a split window 63 vet like?
Dude,
besides awesome.
I mean, there are one-offs at hot rod shows and builds. There have been one-offs, but how about the low production? Like Gunter Works is making 25 of their 993s.
Yeah.
On their website, it says it starts at $525,000.
Well,
before you
sense.
Do anything,
bring us a 63 split window, and we will turn it into
Can you imagine
an icon
that?
Style. I see it. Yeah,
they
for sure.
have actually talked about the E30 M3 and even teased it on their Instagram.
Okay. Yeah.
They made a Photoshop version
that.
Of it.
Yeah,
and,
of course they did. Yeah.
Okay. But how about BMW 2002s? Bring those back with a hot engine.
I think the E30 is on that list for
sure. The E30 has to be on the list. A variety of Astons and Jags. I mean, Eagle E Type already is kind of doing it.
It does. Yeah.
How about like a 74 Alfa Romeo GTV? Kind of a cool,
sure.
fun Porsche 914s. Got to be on there.
Maybe. All right.
Mercedes Benzes, like the SLs of the 80s and older, and the 220s from the 50s. Old low tie, certainly.
Yeah.
Mini Coopers, International Scouts.
Sorry, I'm stuck on Lotus. I know you're shocked. I've been watching the old Bond films with my son.
And yeah, you're still in your Bond phase.
We watched Spy Who Loved Me, which is the white Esprit that goes underwater. For Your Eyes Only is the red, the next slightly revised Lotus Esprit with winter tires on it, a ski rack on the back, which I think might be part of the reason I'm as weird as I am, is having that image burned into my head as a kid. So, but hang on, that era of Lotus Esprit, the full doorstop Lotus Esprit, done like a singer.
By the way, Elon has one of the movie props. You've heard this. I was in the studio at one point and I saw it. And it's full of copper tubing like your water heater kind of tubing on the inside. It's very janky.
And of course it is.
It's a movie welded prop. up and soldered all this stuff. It's very funny.
But I'm just imagining that era of Esprit like an icon style build with all modern stuff that you get. That's the best of all worlds. That's awesome there. I love that.
Okay. I'll land on three more. Audi Quattros.
Okay.
All Volkswagen buses.
That's already happening. How would you like your Volkswagen bus redone?
Exactly.
There's a shop for that. Yeah.
And then the last one, I think, for all us enthusiasts.
Okay.
A Focus or Ford Escort RS Cosworth.
I see where you
went. Done like that.
Interesting.
Kaboom. Okay. That would be
the one
awesome.
With the big double wing.
Yep.
Yeah. That's funny. Okay. All right. This is cool. Look, but I think this is the crux of where we are as enthusiasts right here. I think where the crossroads is happening, where we're starting to have discussions about how do I get that old stuff, but I want it built now.
Mm-hmm.
And manufacturers, as much as I hate it, but it's a reality, manufacturers are going to build the thing they can do volume of. And when they do low volume stuff, it's kind of shocking.
Chapter 2, Vintage Watches. Creak. Just kidding.
Oh, man.
Okay, we're really taking a break now. Thank you, guys. We'll be back. We all have a lot of to-do lists, and some of them get quite long. You know, drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea, though. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything.
All you have to do is go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save, you've heard it before, 15% or more on your car insurance.
Extra money in your pocket? This just may be the most rewarding to-do thing on your list today.
We're often asked how we find the cars we recommend, because we do a lot of research for the show. Local or nationwide, our searches start with our friends at Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car site separately, you can enter your parameters into Auto Tempest one time and search them all at once.
You can see results from Cars.com, Cars Direct, eBay, and more, or you can jump to AutoTrader and CarGurus without entering anything new. You can even search all of Craigslist nationwide. You know how hard it is to search Craigslist all at once? You can with Auto Tempest.
Auto Tempest can help you find your next new or used car if there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the entire country. Plus, the folks at Auto Tempest actually do listen to this very podcast right along with you, and they're always looking for ways to refine the site to make it better. They already have research tools, buyer and seller guides, and are listening to what features users want.
So if we give you drive homework, or you're chasing your dream car, or you're just looking to feed the disease, autotempest.com is the place to start. Heck, I was on it an hour ago.
We're back with a car debate for Jim that directly relates to where we were, because Jim used to own a fully analog car. He had a 1990 BMW 325i, so that is an E30, but not an M3. Now, when I was in high school, a friend of mine, yes, I had that friend, had one of those.
All the cute rich girls at my high school drove those.
Yeah. So, and it was, look, as a guy that knew nothing about cars at the time, I recognized how special it was to drive. Mm-hmm. I drove it a couple times. One of the times I drove it hard, and the fuel injectors needed to be cleaned, and so it went into limp mode while I was driving it.
Ooh.
My friend was quite angry.
Ooh.
And to my, he thought I'd broken his car. And, of course, I thought I'd broken his car. And yeesh. I was his poor friend. So I thought, this is going to end so badly.
Here's your car
Seriously,
back.
I was driving it with him. It started to freak out and lose its mind while I was in the driver's seat.
Or was that more of a, sorry, dude, I don't know what's wrong with your car. Here's your key. I don't know what.
We were together. He thought I'd broken his car. To his dad's credit, his dad went and, you know, turned it into the mechanic and was like, this wasn't Todd's doing. This is the fuel injectors getting clogged. This happens. It's a maintenance item. We're going to get it fixed. It's not Todd's fault.
Whew.
I mean, he was my friend. Now it's quotes, was fully ready to throw me under the bus, and I felt very responsible because I didn't know any better. It was like I was driving it, and all of a sudden it's not running. And what the, you know? Yeah. Anyway.
Wow.
But this is one of those.
Wow.
And the point here, I'm bringing it back to Jim. The point here is Jim had this car, and at some point he realized, okay, his wife says, look, we need this car, which he'd had for 20 years as the do-it-all everything, loved it.
Awesome.
We need to replace it with a car that is more modern that they can give to their eldest daughter.
Right, right.
So he bought a 2009 Mazda 3, which was perfect for that usage, but he's always missed the BMW.
Well, he said his oldest is off to school, and by that I think we mean college, mm-hmm. and he has now come into a little money. We don't know how much money, mm-hmm. but we'll not blow out the budget completely, completely, and he's looking
There'll
for this
a range.
Replacement.
There'll be a range, yeah.
It will be. He's looking for this replacement, and he said that he's watched enough of our content to calibrate our car judgment, and now he's
These
wondering.
Guys have no idea, but let's see how far off the base they get. Yeah,
boom. That'd be great. Sorry there about you your budget, yeah. dude. Anyway, so what modern car would be a good replacement for this old E30? Mm. He suspects that nothing actually will because that era is behind us,
That's
as
what we're
we
talking about.
Just
yeah.
identified.
Yeah, for sure.
But
for sure.
What is the 21st century equivalent? What is the modern, yeah. even though yeah. in car world, that 1990 BMW is still kind of a modern car. I mean, if we look at it stretched out from 1895.
Yes. Well, when, yeah, if we're going you know, all the way back. But
still.
But it's right at the beginning. It's right at the cusp of the things we talked about with the airbags and the safety things and that kind of stuff. All the stuff yeah. that has made cars heavier and more numb.
Sweet. Thicker
it's at the
eight
very
pillars,
beginning. Yeah, it's at the very beginning of it.
Yeah. All right. So the spending a little money list is I'm starting out ascending order towards
okay. madness.
You know, the full on.
Toward madness. Got
yes,
it. Yeah.
Yes. Starting out with a BMW M2. They're used.
Okay.
Kind of fun.
Yeah.
Back to BMW. And the next car is the 2020 Toyota Supra. I am.
Really? You're
am
going there.
Jim, putting it on my list.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Go drive one.
Okay.
When they're available. I believe it was July 22 when they're in dealerships, I think. And, you know, who knows if it's going to be markup and sorry, you got to sign here if you're even going to. You know, they might not let you drive it. Who knows?
I fully expect we're going to have not only
we'll see.
Dealer markups, but also no test drives. I think both are going to happen, which is both are wrong, by the way. I'm putting it
bummer.
Out there, wrong. Yeah. If we are making laws, that's one of my laws. Anyway, sorry.
No markup
wrong.
And no
yeah.
non-test drive.
Exactly. Anyway.
Availability. All right. Got to mention Caymans, and depending on your budget, mm-hmm. 981 Cayman. I mean, Cayman or Cayman S.
Okay.
But then sitting above that would be the prior generation Cayman R.
Now, I think it's more analog. Yeah,
now
for
these
sure.
are still $50,000 to $65,000, mm-hmm. depending on mileage and condition and all that stuff. It's been tracked or modified.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of depends. But they, I have seen them as low as 55, somewhere in there. Even 50 is tough.
Yeah.
But how much money are we talking about? And the Cayman R would be a hoot. Moving on.
You heard it here first. Cayman R equals hoot.
Yeah, they are. All right. So four more here. Alpha 4C. Worth a drive.
That's a good one.
Worth
I don't it. Have that on the list. That's a good
worth
one.
A lovely
Alpha 4C
drive.
Is worth a drive, for sure, yeah.
If you really want to treat yourself, Jim, how about a BMW 1M?
Mm-hmm.
Again, moving on into the money zone.
Yeah, you're spending 60, zone. 70, yeah. Yeah.
Now, yeah, it again depends on where you can find one and you're in mileage. Enthusiast Auto always has the best, but they're blindingly expensive.
Yeah.
By the way, they,
mark
have,
up.
They yeah. have a 1990
Uh-oh.
Z1. With the
really with the fold down
the
doors,
fold down the retractable
slide
doors
down
into
the
sill,
the pan, yeah,
the rocker,
yeah.
It's $99,000. It has low miles. It's a cool color of green. They're super rare.
Yeah,
manual, analog. You will not see yourself coming and going in this
ever.
Car.
Yeah, I don't even think they officially sold them here, but you can get them now. Yeah,
I want this car.
Mm-hmm.
But not for $100,000. I've never.
You'd go somewhere else. Yeah.
I hope in my life to be able to spend $100,000 on a car.
Yeah, I hear you.
I can't now. I
yeah.
don't know when that'll be. But if I'm spending $100,000, it's not going to be that.
Yeah. That's what we were
That's
saying.
That's after
before.
My
yeah.
garage is full of the other 15 to 20 cars. I've checked the boxes.
Yeah.
And then, I've got some extra money. I'm all vacationed out and I've got three houses. $100,000.
All those garages. Yeah.
You know, maybe
That's
I
funny.
Can, doodle to the store in that thing or something.
With the doors down. Yeah.
yeah. Anyway. And then 911 and Elises are definitely on the list.
Okay.
So
I like it.
Rounding everything out. But Jim, whatever you do buy, I want to hear cackling.
I agree.
You need to, I mean, send us a recording of you in the car, whatever mm-hmm. you buy, and I don't know, but I want to hear hoots and hollers.
That's funny.
And lots of enjoyment for whatever you do get.
Jim, I like this question. I want to touch on a couple quick things, and I have my own list. Some of mine are similar to Paul's, but a lot of them aren't. One of the things you said here is you said you never connected with the Mazda 3, and you miss that feeling. I'm going to go on a side note real quick. I don't think it has anything to do with Mazda. I think it has to do with going from analog feeling, old school rear-wheel drive, to modern front-wheel drive. I think that's where most of this is lost.
So. Yeah.
So the main place I want to take you is back to rear-wheel drive. The second place I want to take you is ideally away from electronic power steering. There are exceptions. I've got a couple of exceptions mm-hmm. on my list. But generally, I'm going rear-wheel drive and hydraulic power steering.
Does that necessarily mean older?
Unfortunately, yes, it does at this point.
I was wondering. Okay.
But you're a BMW guy, so I thought, all right, you're longing for that old BMW. You're going for a modern version. I have three on my list, real quick. Look at the same generation, the 135 IS and mm-hmm. the 335 IS. That is still hydraulic steering from BMW. You have not mentioned how big you need this car to be. I would love, I know you would love, Paul, you to just be in something, just two-seat dedicated sports car, Jim. I would love that.
Ideally.
I'm not sure that's what you're shopping for, so I'm going to mention them, but I'm also going to try to find things that are 2+2 if I can. So 135 IS, 335 IS, both fantastic hydraulic steering, two different size cars. What do you like? Both are around $20,000 to find them. Mm-hmm. Which is why I like mm-hmm. it. So you're BMW, and I think you are the pieces that you like of the E30 done in a modern style. I have to jump to, I'm tripling the price now, do drive a 1M.
Nicely
done.
You
mentioned
it. Good job.
But it's that same generation. But the 1M, it's a greatest hits car. And I mean, that's why they are going up in value. Yeah. I hate that they are 60 to 70 because they're getting farther away from a car I would ever own. But it is a car that I would own. And I as a guy that likes little tiny things, I still lust after that 1M.
Oh.
It's a fantastic car to drive.
Yeah.
And when we drove, when we did our icon film of all the generations of the M3 and its offshoots as well, we drove the M2 and the 1M side by side, back to back. The M2 is awesome. The 1M I like a whole category better. Personally,
can you imagine a Gunterized 1M?
Okay.
A Gunter Works 1M.
Yeah, the Singer 1M. I get where you're going. Yeah, craziness.
Cool.
So somebody's going to do that. Give it 20 years. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But definitely drive a 1M because if you can afford that, I think that is your closest analog in the modern time of you going E30. But then I went other places real quick.
Okay.
If you want to go bigger, drive the Alfa Romeo Giulia. Now, you're talking electric steering. It's drive-by-wire braking. We're getting into very modern stuff, but drive that car. I don't know if that's too big, but drive that car in some form.
Well-priced.
I think it's very interesting for you to drive. To give you an opportunity for Mazda to not be the issue, you need to drive the Miata.
Think so?
Your issue with Mazda, I don't think is Mazda. I think it's front-wheel drive. This is the iconic classic rear-wheel drive convertible sports car. It is the icon of that segment. Please go drive a Miata. Pick a generation and drive it. I think you'll surprise yourself with that car. I liked where you were on the Cayman R. I think the Porsche Speedster, the Boxster Spider
is on there. Is up there. Yeah.
And then
those are expensive.
If we're gonna stay German, I have to say this as well. 997. This is 05 to 2012 911. Smaller than the current 911s, last two generations.
They are.
Has hydraulic steering. It is, I feel like, that is the pivot point in 911s from the old ones and the new ones. I know we can talk air-cooled, water-cooled. I know that. But I'm saying, I think, we keep talking about these films we've done. Watch our 50 years of 911.
They exist for a reason. They exist
Watch our 50 years
reason.
Of 911. Even though, yes, there is a difference, air-cooled, water-cooled, I think personally there is a bigger shift in organic feel that happens from 997 to 991 when it gets bigger and it goes electric steering and these kind of things.
I mean, it's an entirely different platform.
I think driver feel changes there.
Sure.
So I think shop that 997.
Jim, cackling.
It's key. It's key.
All right. We've got questions. So many good ones. All right. Elephant in the room from Oklaso Tagal. I apologize if I mispronounce that on Instagram. We have watched Fernando not qualify for the Indy 500.
Mm-hmm.
And he's asking, does Zach Brown survive at McLaren after the disappointing month of May? Mm-hmm. Zach Brown is the CEO of McLaren Racing and the owner of United Autosports, by the way.
Yeah.
I Quite possibly, because this was Fernando's kind of, hey, I'm really going to go for the Triple Crown again.
I'm doing this now. Yeah,
really going to do it. He didn't even qualify, and I forget the name of the team that was the last place qualifier that just barely squeaked by Fernando, and they are the lowest funded and scrappiest kind of startup little team, and they out-qualify him. That, I cannot liken it to Fernando's driving. The guy is amazing.
He's clearly been given a car. He's a guy with skill, given the improper tools to do his job.
I kind of feel that way too. Even though McLaren, he had the Honda engine in 2018, and he's got the Chevy engine powering this McLaren now.
Yeah.
But I'm going, wow. Watching the qualifying actually made all of this very much more personal because the cameras just got more in people's faces and there were more up in the qualifying. And it just seemed like, wow, this is actually a really hard thing. It's not just zoom, we're around the track and look how fast I went in 230 and yay. It's very, very difficult.
I think it's clear that heads are probably going to roll at McLaren. Is it going to be Zach Brown? I don't know, but I think heads are going to roll for sure, yeah.
I mean, great lineup of road cars. Their racing teams, not doing so hot.
Which is, honestly, rewind 20 years and it's the exact opposite equation.
Right.
Yeah, we make great race cars, and we dabble in road cars, but not really. Yeah, for sure. Chloe the Is on Instagram said, real quick, on the Utah meetup, what's better, drive 8 or 9 hours to the meetup so he can drive his own car on all of the events, or rent some sort of sporty car from local rental agencies or Turo? I think the dividing line on this is, do you want to be on the track? We have a track day that is really an incredibly fun track day. It's the outer circuit of the big – it's both halves of our local racetrack, which is like a 3.5-4 mile circuit. It's fantastic. You aren't going to be tracking your Turo. You're just not, okay?
Probably the best idea.
Most likely you won't. Yeah. I mean, maybe you'd track your Enterprise car, but that's also a risk. So I think the big question is, do you want to be on track? If you don't want to be on track at all, then come into town, rent something. People did it last year, had a blast. People came in from all over the country, had good Turo rental cars, didn't get on track, had a great time. You can. 8-9 hours, I feel like that. I mean, you're not, I wouldn't want somebody to drive in and do an overnight unless you really want a road trip. But 8-9 hours, you can do it in a day. Bring your own car. Then you know your own car. You can have that experience. I see the merit in it for sure.
The legend continues, skewers me a bit here with the question. If the stated aim is looking for different experiences, how do I rationalize a 928 or a Porsche 914 for a next car?
Yeah.
I can't. I can't.
It's back to us writing laws,
Paul. I can't.
We're writing laws here, yeah.
However, two points to make here.
Please.
We have also said that if you're not done with a car, it's okay to continue and get another one. If it is lost in an accident or a forced sale for whatever reason, or it just exits your life and you're not done with it,
okay,
that's okay.
Yeah.
Can we mulligan ourselves under that rule?
All right.
Second point is, we've driven, you and I have driven so many cars. I've said it before, I wish I had the list. I wish I were diligent enough to keep track of the list of cars since we launched the show, not just in my life, but just since we launched the show,
I get it.
You and I have driven, I would love to look back. But we've driven so many cars, and despite enjoying particular cars and merits of cars, and then our also stated goal of translating that to all of you watching videos and watching the films, we want you to feel what we're feeling. That doesn't necessarily mean we want to own them. We might want to own them for a week or a month or a little bit of time. But my next car, we've driven all these cars, and so we do know, we come back to the driving experiences that we know and love. Mm-hmm. You've driven an Evora plenty.
Yeah.
Why do you still want one?
Fair. Yeah.
Why do you want a 1M? Why do I want a 920? You know what I'm saying?
There are cars again, that make a big enough impression that we want to come around and live with that car.
We've driven it, but then I want more of that.
Yeah, for sure.
How much more? We can't own all of them. I mean, love to, but, you know.
Own all of the cars.
Money. But
And storage space.
So those are my two mulligan comments, but otherwise, no, I can't. I just want.
That's very funny. Two related questions on Instagram. I'm going to mention both questions. I'm going to try to talk to both of them. First is Skidmarks 2051, and the other one is Super Mario. Skidmarks 2051, should I feel bad about putting miles on my Focus RS? I sometimes switch between the mentality of I bought it to drive it and I don't want to put too many miles on it. That's Skidmark's question. The other question is Super Mario. Are you guys friends? How do I convince my friend to drive his enthusiast car? He's concerned about putting miles on it. I'm wondering if you two know each other, but even if you don't, you're speaking directly to something that exists across all enthusiasts. And I want to say something really quickly. There's a mindset thing here. You have to decide right away, am I buying a car as an investment? Probably a bad choice. Or am I buying a car to drive it? Mm-hmm. Yes, we're seeing the Supras and the Grand Nationals and the crazy cars that they are now worth ridiculous money. But the trend on all of those is little to no miles. And that's somebody that is buying and mothballing and hoping for the best. And if you want to do that, look, I think that's a tragedy. I think it's a tragedy to buy something that's meant to be driven and never drive it because you hope somebody else later, let's be honest, is going to buy it and also not drive it.
Saving it for the next guy.
Yeah. So I don't think that buying a car and not driving it because you want to preserve its value is really a great financial choice. I also think there's not a good middle ground here. There's not a, I drove it some and so it's worth a lot more. I drove it not at all and it's worth money, or I drove it all the time and I'm using it because that's why I bought it. I'm going to say to both of you, you buy an enthusiast car, drive it. Unless it is one of, I'm going to make a rule that's going to bite me in the butt anyway. But were there less than 100 made, worry about it. I might even say less than 1,000 made.
I mean, and
worry
if you own a car like that, congratulations.
Yes, for sure.
Holy
for
moly.
Sure. Now maybe worry about your miles, okay? But you know what? The McLaren F1, they're going up in value now and they're being driven like crazy because there's so few of them it doesn't matter anymore. Hmm. But that's a side note. But my point is, if there were less than 1,000 made, maybe we can have this conversation. You bought a Focus RS. They made plenty. Is there somebody, the guy that's going to make money on the Focus RS is the guy that bought one, didn't take the plastic off the seats, it's sitting in a warehouse, and 30 years from now he's going to pull it out and make money on it. The rest of you are just going to drive them.
Right. And the seals are dust, by the way.
Well, his head gasket's going to go if you ever turn on the car.
Don't breathe on the
door
panel.
If you bought a car that, let's be honest, all the rest of the enthusiast cars of the world are mass produced by comparison, and not driving it is not helping you that much, please drive it and enjoy it for what it's for.
Question from Asian Ed on Instagram, tying into a Twitter question from Tom Zambino. First of all, Asian Ed's question, now that we have the Supra, what other iconic sports car badges, do we want resurrected? Mm. Are you talking cars itself? Because I have a couple cars itself, but then the badge itself, like the entire company. I would love it if Toyota brought back the MR2, because that would round out the triple crown of sports cars from the high end at the Supra. The MR2 could be in the middle as a mid-engine fun sports car and still make the 86 at the low end.
They keep teasing it, supposedly. We'll see what happens.
MR2.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Bring that back. All right. An Elise in America, the newest Elise.
Yes, agreed.
Or a new Esprit. And for those of you thinking, why Esprit? Because we have the Evora has rear seats, so the Esprit could theoretically be slotting between your Elise and a larger, they're not that big, Evora.
Well, but the Esprit would be the Ferrari mid-engine V8 fighter. It'd be a $250,000 car. It'd be that. That's where the Esprit goes. It wouldn't. That'd be its competition. It wouldn't be necessarily its price. But the Esprit has always been in that world competition-wise. It'd be your, I didn't buy a McLaren. I didn't buy a 488, the Pista, whatever it's called now. I bought a Lotus. I didn't buy an R8.
So I was thinking Cayman again in the crosshairs again.
No, not for the Esprit. The Esprit would be above that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Above an Evora?
The Evora is the one you're thinking of. It's that Cayman bottom 911 competitor. The Elise has always been below that.
So I've just looked at the Evora as just larger.
Yeah.
It's just larger.
It comparatively, yes.
Not.
But the Esprit is their quote-unquote supercar. It would be up above.
Maybe
but,
so.
But I agree. Let's bring it back. Totally agree.
How about a genuine affordable Lancia Stratos?
Yeah.
I mean, there's that one floating out there that's, I think, on Motor Trend. They've been driving it, and it's a one-off, and it's brilliant and crazy and awesome.
And a chopped-up Ferrari, and
blah.
They made one. Yeah.
But there's one of them, and they're super expensive. How about a genuine FCA? There's got to be a Fiat engine floating around somewhere on the planet that we can stuff in a Lancia Stratos and bring that back, again, as a Cayman competitor.
All right.
How about that from FCA?
What about Honda's new S2000?
That would be nice,
S3000,
too.
The S3000, whatever it's going to be. Let's bring that back. Yeah, for sure.
How about a BMW M1 or 1M? Rearrange the letters and numbers however you want. But yeah. Either of those cars, bring that back.
Yeah.
And then finally, a more affordable Z car, like the Datsun nameplate, bringing back the 240 to 280 Z, somewhere in there.
Aimed right at the 86.
Yes. Yeah. Well, aimed at the Supra, too, because inline six.
Well, but if it was aimed at the 86, then you could let the Z car go up market and directly.
Well, yeah,
the
you
Supra.
Could. You could. Yeah. Maybe the Datsun nameplate is aimed at the 86.
You do
86.
A Datsun,
yeah.
You do a maybe Datsun so. 240, so. And that's at the 86, and you do the Nissan 400Z, and that's aimed at the Supra.
Yeah, that could be. That could work.
Yeah.
Nissan. Hello? Anybody? Yeah. Nissan?
That mic got dropped, and the phone is now off the hook and unplugged. Yeah, exactly. That happened. In fact, speaking of that, Seth asked on Facebook, is the new Supra, how do we compare it, the new Supra, to that older, we really enjoyed it, Z4 M Coupe we drove?
Oh, yeah.
The Supra is stiffer with better visibility.
Good.
Those are the first two things I would say about it. Of course, good. We have a manual versus automatic discussion. Actually, you know what? Quick side rant.
Uh-oh.
There's a discussion going on right now about shouldn't the Supra have a dual clutch? Mm. And people have asked us that question. Look, this could be another topic Tuesday. I'm not going to go that far. I'm going to go real quickly. Dual clutches are great, but let's be honest. What every dual clutch on the planet is trying to do is drive like a automatic does when you aren't hooning it. That's the thing they struggle with. My Lancer, all the way up through the original Ferraris, the original dual clutches, their struggle is to drive in normal conditions because, of course, they can rack off the gear shift.
But
to be as smooth and easygoing as an automatic.
PDKs do.
But here's my point. If the ZF 8-speed can rattle off shifts about as fast as a dual clutch, but be better as an automatic in daily, isn't that a better success? Mm-hmm. This is where I think the ZF 8-speed is great because it can do all the stuff that we're trying desperately to force a dual clutch to do.
Yeah.
But yet they're getting almost as fast as dual clutches when you pull the paddle.
Which is awesome.
Which is the best of both worlds. If we're talking automatics, I still want a manual.
All right. Rescue Pet Motorsports asking, will we ever see a video on the Expedition? Yes, I need to go film it again.
Mm-hmm.
The footage was stolen because I had it all filmed. Yeah. I've got the B-roll ready to go, but the actual interview that I drove it in was actually stolen on part of the, one of the drives that we lost back in the day. So, and then also Tom Z's question on Twitter, do we think because of cost, we'll see even more sports car collaboration like the Fiat Mazda, the Fiata, and the Toyota, Subaru, BMW, Fuji Heavy Industries. It's all stamped under the sheet metal. What?
You just open the hood and it's just all the logos. You can't even see the top of the engine anymore. It's just logos.
How about all the car companies on the planet make a car?
Frightening. I'm horrified.
It's local motors of what that'd be. All right. So he feels like sales are slumping. With slumping sales, that the best way to make more sports cars is to share with another company. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why it's happening.
There's resources. Hence the Stratos. FCA is now a large company with plants worldwide and suppliers and Fiat engines stuffed into a cool... Let's let the designers go a little crazy and bring the cool Cayman competitor, FCA. All right. Well, there's so many more questions. We've got to get to those in, probably a subsequent episode.
Keep asking. You can ask us over and over. We love seeing questions.
I'm going to have to answer the one bucket versus two bucket method. I'm being skewered.
I am literally backing away from the entire discussion. I couldn't believe that's even happening.
Well,
Are
my cars clean and do I like the results?
Yes, they're fantastic.
They're great, and I'll get there. I do hose the cars off before we even start washing.
By the way,
so I rinse them off first.
There's a whole thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna get buried, but that's okay. Thanks for the teasing. Really appreciate you guys listening and watching. Cheers, everyone.